It almost seems like they don't want to keep something out. They want to keep us in. I pushed the thought out of my head. That makes no sense. Four steps away from the fence, where he was talking to a female Dauntless guard, with a gun balanced on her shoulder a moment before. I am worried that you have a knack for making unwise decisions, he says when he's a foot away from me. I cross my arms. It was a 2-minute conversation. I don't think a smaller time frame makes it any less unwise. He furrows his eyebrows and touches the corner of my bruised eye with his fingertips. My head jerks back, but he doesn't take his hand away. Instead, he tilts his head and sighs. You know, if you could just learn to attack first, you might do better. Attack first? I say. How will that help? You're fast. If you can get a few good hits in before they know what's going on, you could win. He shrugs, and his hand falls. I'm surprised you know that, I say quietly, since you left halfway through my one and only fight. It wasn't something I wanted to watch, he says. What's that supposed to mean? He clears his throat. Looks like the next train is here. Time to go, Triss. Chapter 12. I crawl across my mattress and heave a sigh. It has been 2 days since my fight with Peter, and my bruises are turning purple-blue. I have gotten used to aching every time I move, so now I move better, but I am still far from healed. Even though I am still injured, I had to fight again today. Luckily, this time I was paired against Myra, who couldn't throw a good punch if someone was controlling her arm for her. I got a good hit in during the first 2 minutes. She fell down and was too dizzy to get back up. I should feel triumphant, but there is no triumph in punching a girl like Myra. The second I touch my head to the pillow, the door to the dormitory opens, and people stream into the room with flashlights. I sit up, almost hitting my head on the bed frame above me, and squint through the dark to see what's going on. Everybody up! Someone roars. A flashlight shines behind his head, making the rings in his ears glint. Eric. Surrounding him are other Dauntless, some of whom I have seen in the pit, some of whom I have never seen before. Four stands among them. His eyes shift to mine and stay there. I stare back and forget that all around me the transfers are getting out of bed. Did you go deaf, stiff? Demands Eric. I snap out of my daze and slide out from beneath the blankets. I'm glad I sleep fully clothed, because Christina stands next to our bunk wearing only a t-shirt, her long legs bare. She folds her arms and stares at Eric. I wish suddenly that I could stare so boldly at someone with hardly any clothes on, but I would never be able to do that. You have 5 minutes to get dressed and meet us by the tracks, says Eric. We're going on another field trip. I shove my feet into shoes and sprint, wincing, behind Christina on the way to the train. A drop of sweat rolls down the back of my neck as we run up the paths along the walls of the pit, pushing past members on our way up. They don't seem surprised to see us. I wonder how many frantic running people they see on a weekly basis. We make it to the tracks just behind the Dauntless-born initiates. Next to the tracks is a black pile. I make out a cluster of long gun barrels and trigger guards. Are we going to shoot something? Christina hisses in my ear. Next to the pile are boxes of what looks like ammunition. I inch closer to read one of the boxes. Written on it is paintballs. I've never heard of them before, but the name is self-explanatory. I laugh. Everyone grab a gun! Shouts Eric. We rush toward the pile. I am closest to it, so I snatch the first gun I can find, which is heavy, but not too heavy for me to lift, and grab a box of paintballs. I shove the box in my pocket and sling the gun across my back so the strap crosses my chest. Time estimate? Eric asks Four. Four checks his watch. Any minute now. How long is it going to take you to memorize the train schedule? Why should I, when I have you to remind me of it? Says Eric, shoving Four's shoulder. A circle of light appears on my left, far away. It grows larger as it comes closer, shining against the side of Forrest's face, creating a shadow in the faint hollow beneath his cheekbone. He is the first to get on the train, and I run after him, not waiting for Christina or Will or Al to follow me. Forrest turns around as I fall into stride next to the car and holds out a hand. I grab his arm and he pulls me in. Even the muscles in his forearm are taut, defined. I let go quickly without looking at him, and sit down on the other side of the car. Once everyone is in, Four speaks up. We'll be dividing into two teams to play capture the flag. Each team will have an even mix of members, Dauntless-born initiates, and transfers. One team will get off first, and find a place to hide their flag. Then the second team will get off and do the same. The car sways and Four grabs the side of the doorway for balance. This is a Dauntless tradition, so I suggest you take it seriously.
What do we get if we win?
Someone shouts.
Sounds like the kind of question someone not from Dauntless would ask, says Four, raising an eyebrow.
You get to win, of course.
Four and I will be your team captains, says Eric. He looks at Four. Let's divide up transfers first, shall we?
I tilt my head back. If they're picking us, I will be chosen last. I can feel it.
You go first, Four says.
Eric shrugs.
Edward.
Four leans against the doorframe and nods. The moonlight makes his eyes bright. He scans the group of transfer initiates, briefly, without calculation, and says,
I want the stiff.
A faint undercurrent of laughter fills the car. Heat rushes into my cheeks. I don't know whether to be angry at the people laughing at me or flattered by the fact that he chose me first.
Got something to prove?
Asks Eric, with his trademark smirk.
Or are you just picking the weak ones so that if you lose, you'll have someone to blame it on?
Four shrugs.
Something like that?
Angry. I should definitely be angry. I scowl at my hands. Whatever Four's strategy is, it's based on the idea that I am weaker than the other initiates, and it gives me a bitter taste in my mouth. I have to prove him wrong. I have to.
Your turn, says Four.
Peter.
Christina. That throws a wrench in his strategy. Christina is not one of the weak ones. What exactly is he doing?
Molly.
Will, says Four, biting his thumbnail.
Al.
Drew.
Last one left is Myra, so she's with me, says Eric. Dauntless-born initiates next.
I stop listening once they're finished with us. If Four isn't trying to prove something by choosing the weak, what is he doing? I look at each person he chooses. What do we have in common? Once they're halfway through the Dauntless-born initiates, I have an idea of what it is. With the exception of Will and a couple of the others, we all share the same body type. Narrow shoulders, small frames. All the people on Eric's team are broad and strong. Just yesterday, Four told me I was fast. We will all be faster than Eric's team, which will probably be good for capture the flag. I haven't played before, but I know it's a game of speed rather than brute force. I cover a smile with my hand. Eric is more ruthless than Four, but Four is smarter. They finish choosing teams and Eric smirks at Four.
Your team can get off second, says Eric.
Don't do me any favors, Four replies. He smiles a little. You know I don't need them to win.
No, I know that you'll lose no matter when you get off, says Eric, biting down briefly on one of the rings in his lip.
Take your scrawny team and get off first, then.
We all stand up. Al gives me a forlorn look, and I smile back in what I hope is a reassuring way. If any of the four of us had to end up on the same team as Eric, Peter, and Molly, at least it was him. They usually leave him alone. The train is about to dip to the ground. I am determined to land on my feet. Just before I jump, someone shoves my shoulder, and I almost topple out of the train car. I don't look back to see who it is, Molly, Drew, or Peter. It doesn't matter which one. Before they can try it again, I jump. This time, I am ready for the momentum the train gives me, and I run a few steps to defuse it, but keep my balance. Fierce pleasure courses through me, and I smile.
It's a small accomplishment, but it makes me feel dauntless. One of the Dauntless-born initiates touches Four's shoulder and asks, "When your team won, where did you put the flag?" "Telling you wouldn't really be in the spirit of the exercise, Marlene," he says coolly.
"Come on, Four,"
she whines. She gives him a flirtatious smile. He brushes her hand off his arm, and for some reason, I find myself grinning.
"Navy Pier," another Dauntless-born initiate calls out.
He is tall, with brown skin and dark eyes, handsome.
"My brother was on the winning team. They kept the flag at the carousel."
"Let's go there, then," suggests Will.
No one objects, so we walk east, toward the marsh that was once a lake. When I was young, I tried to imagine what it would look like as a lake, with no fence built into the mud to keep the city safe. But it is difficult to imagine that much water in one place.
"We're close to Erudite headquarters, right?" asks Christina, bumping Will's shoulder with her own.
"Yeah, it's south of here," he says. He looks over his shoulder, and for a second, his expression is full of longing. Then it's gone. I am less than a mile away from my brother. It has been a week since we were that close together. I shake my head a little to get the thought out of my mind. I can't think about him today. When I have to focus on making it through stage one, I can't think about him any day. We walk across the bridge. We still need the bridges because the mud beneath them is too wet to walk on. I wonder how long it's been since the river dried up. Once we cross the bridge, the city changes. Behind us, most of the buildings were in use, and even if they weren't, they looked well tended. In front of us is a sea of crumbling concrete and broken glass. The silence of this part of the city is eerie. It feels like a nightmare. It's hard to see where I'm going, because it's after midnight and all the city lights are off. Marlene takes out a flashlight and shines it at the street in front of us.
"Scared of the dark, Mar?" the dark-eyed Dauntless-born initiate teases.
"If you want to step on broken glass, Uriah, be my guest," she snaps, but she turns it off anyway. I have realized that part of being dauntless is being willing to make things more difficult for yourself in order to be self-sufficient. There's nothing especially brave about wandering dark streets with no flashlight, but we are not supposed to need help, even from light. We are supposed to be capable of anything.
I like that, because there might come a day when there is no flashlight, there is no gun, there is no guiding hand, and I want to be ready for it. The buildings end just before the marsh. A strip of land juts out into the marsh, and rising from it is a giant white wheel, with dozens of red passenger cars dangling from it at regular intervals. The Ferris wheel. Think about it. People used to ride that thing for fun, says Will, shaking his head.
They must have been dauntless, I say.
Yeah, but a lame version of dauntless, Christina laughs. A dauntless Ferris wheel wouldn't have cars. You would just hang on tight with your hands and good luck to you.
We walk down the side of the pier. All the buildings on my left are empty, their signs torn down and their windows closed, but it is a clean kind of emptiness. Whoever left these places left them by choice and at their leisure. Some places in the city are not like that.
"Dare you to jump into the marsh," says Christina to Will.
"You first."
We reach the carousel. Some of the horses are scratched and weathered, their tails broken off or their saddles chipped. Four takes the flag out of his pocket.
"In 10 minutes, the other team will pick their location," he says. "I suggest you take this time to formulate a strategy. We may not be erudite, but mental preparedness is one aspect of your dauntless training. Arguably, it is the most important aspect."
He is right about that. What good is a prepared body if you have a scattered mind? Will takes the flag from Four.
"Some people should stay here and guard, and some people should go out and scout the other team's location," Will says.
"Yeah, you think?" Marlene plucks the flag from Will's fingers.
"Who put you in charge, Transfer?"
"No one," says Will, "but someone's got to do it."
Maybe we should develop a more defensive strategy. Wait for them to come to us, then take them out, suggests Christina.
That's the sissy way out, Uriah says. I vote we go all out, hide the flag well enough that they can't find it.
Everyone bursts into the conversation at once, their voices louder with each passing second. Christina defends Will's plan. The Dauntless-born initiates vote for offense. Everyone argues about who should make the decision. Four sits down on the edge of the carousel, leaning against a plastic horse's foot. His eyes lift to the sky, where there are no stars, only a round moon peeking through a thin layer of clouds. The muscles in his arms are relaxed. His hand rests on the back of his neck. He looks almost comfortable, holding that gun to his shoulder. I close my eyes briefly. Why does he distract me so easily? I need to focus. What would I say if I could shout above the sniping behind me? We can't act until we know where the other team is. They could be anywhere within a 2-mile radius, although I can rule out the empty marsh as an option. The best way to find them is not to argue about how to search for them, or how many to send out in a search party. It's to climb as high as possible. I look over my shoulder to make sure no one is watching. None of them look at me. So I walk toward the Ferris wheel with light, quiet footsteps, pressing my gun to my back with one hand to keep it from making noise. When I stare up at the Ferris wheel from the ground, my throat feels tighter. It is taller than I thought, so tall I can barely see the car swinging at the top. The only good thing about its height is that it is built to support weight. If I climb it, it won't collapse beneath me. My heart pumps faster. Will I really risk my life for this? To win a game the Dauntless like to play? It's so dark I can barely see them, but when I stare at the huge rusted supports holding the wheel in place, I see the rungs of a ladder. Each support is only as wide as my shoulders, and there are no railings to hold me in. But climbing a ladder is better than climbing the spokes of the wheel. I grab a rung. It's rusty and thin, and feels like it might crumble in my hands. I put my weight on the lowest rung to test it, and jump to make sure it will hold me up. The movement hurts my ribs, and I wince. Tris, a low voice says behind me. I don't know why it doesn't startle me. Maybe because I am becoming dauntless, and mental readiness is something I am supposed to develop. Maybe because his voice is low and smooth and almost soothing. Whatever the reason, I look over my shoulder. Four stands behind me with his gun slung across his back, just like mine. Yes, I say. I came to find out what you think you're doing. I'm seeking higher ground, I say. I don't think I'm doing anything. I see his smile in the dark. All right, I'm coming. I pause a second. He doesn't look at me the way Will, Christina, and Al sometimes do. Like I am too small and too weak to be of any use, and they pity me for it. But if he insists on coming with me, it is probably because he doubts me. I'll be fine, I say. Undoubtedly, he replies. I don't hear the sarcasm, but I know it's there. It has to be. I climb, and when I'm a few feet off the ground, he comes after me. He moves faster than I do, and soon his hands find the rungs that my feet leave. So tell me, he says quietly as we climb. He sounds breathless. What do you think the purpose of this exercise is? The game, I mean, not the climbing. I stare down at the pavement. It seems far away now, but I'm not even a third of the way up. Above me is a platform, just below the center of the wheel. That's my destination. I don't even think about how I will climb back down. The breeze that brushed my cheek earlier now presses against my side. The higher we go, the stronger it will get. I need to be ready. Learning about strategy, I say. Teamwork, maybe? Teamwork, he repeats. A laugh hitches in his throat. It sounds like a panicked breath. Maybe not, I say. Teamwork doesn't seem to be a dauntless priority. The wind is stronger now. I press closer to the white support so I don't fall, but that makes it hard to climb. Below me, the carousel looks small. I can barely see my team under the awning. Some of them are missing. A search party must have left. Four says, it's supposed to be a priority.
it used to be. But I'm not really listening, because the height is dizzying. My hands ache from holding the rungs, and my legs are shaking, but I'm not sure why. It isn't the height that scares me. The height makes me feel alive with energy, every organ and vessel and muscle in my body singing at the same pitch. Then I realize what it is. It's him. Something about him makes me feel like I am about to fall, or turn to liquid, or burst into flames. My hand almost misses the next rung. "Now tell me," he says through a bursting breath. "What do you think learning strategy has to do with bravery?" The question reminds me that he is my instructor, and I am supposed to learn something from this. A cloud passes over the moon, and the light shifts across my hands. It prepares you to act, I say finally. You learn strategy so you can use it. I hear him breathing behind me, loud and fast. Are you all right, Four? Are you a human, Triss? Being up this high. He gulps for air. It doesn't scare you at all? I look over my shoulder at the ground. If I fall now, I will die. But I don't think I will fall. A gust of air presses against my left side, throwing my body weight to the right. I gasp and cling to the rungs, my balance shifting. Four's cold hand clamps around one of my hips, one of his fingers finding a strip of bare skin just under the hem of my t-shirt. He squeezes, steadying me and pushing me gently to the left, restoring my balance. Now I can't breathe. I pause, staring at my hands, my mouth dry. I feel the ghost of where his hand was, his fingers long and narrow. "You okay?" he asks quietly. "Yes," I say, my voice strained. I keep climbing, silently, until I reach the platform. Judging by the blunted ends of metal rods, it used to have railings, but it doesn't anymore. I sit down and scoot to the end of it, so Four has somewhere to sit. Without thinking, I put my legs over the side. Four, however, crouches and presses his back to the metal support, breathing heavily. "You're afraid of heights," I say. "How do you survive in the Dauntless compound?" "I ignore my fear," he says. "When I make decisions, I pretend it doesn't exist." I stare at him for a second. I can't help it. To me, there's a difference between not being afraid and acting in spite of fear, as he does. I have been staring at him too long. "What?" he says quietly. "Nothing." I look away from him and toward the city. I have to focus. I climbed up here for a reason. The city is pitch black. But even if it wasn't, I wouldn't be able to see very far. A building stands in my way. "We're not high enough," I say. I look up. Above me is a tangle of white bars, the wheels scaffolding. If I climb carefully, I can wedge my feet between the supports and the crossbars and stay secure, or as secure as possible. "I'm going to climb," I say, standing up. I grab one of the bars above my head and pull myself up. Shooting pains go through my bruised sides, but I ignore them. "For God's sake, Stiff," he says. "You don't have to follow me," I say, staring at the maze of bars above me. I shove my foot onto the place where two bars cross and push myself up, grabbing another bar in the process. I sway for a second, my heart beating so hard I can't feel anything else. Every thought I have condenses into that heartbeat, moving at the same rhythm. "Yes, I do," he says. "This is crazy, and I know it. A fraction of an inch of mistake, half a second of hesitation, and my life is over." Heat tears through my chest, and I smile as I grab the next bar. I pull myself up, my arms shaking, and force my leg under me so I am standing on another bar. When I feel steady, I look down at Four. But instead of seeing him, I see straight to the ground. I can't breathe. I imagine my body plummeting, smacking into the bars as it falls down, and my limbs at broken angles on the pavement, just like Rita's sister when she didn't make it onto the roof.
Four grabs a bar with each hand and pulls himself up, easy, like he's sitting up in bed. But he is not comfortable or natural here. Every muscle in his arm stands out. It is a stupid thing for me to think when I'm 100 feet off the ground. I grab another bar, find another place to wedge my foot. When I look at the city again, the building isn't in my way. I'm high enough to see the skyline. Most of the buildings are black against a navy sky, but the red lights at the top of the hub are lit up. They blink half as fast as my heartbeat. Beneath the buildings, the streets look like tunnels. For a few seconds, I see only a dark blanket over the land in front of me. Just faint differences between building and sky and street and ground. Then I see a tiny pulsing light on the ground. "See that?" I say, pointing. Four stops climbing when he's right behind me and looks over my shoulder, his chin next to my head. His breaths flutter against my ear, and I feel shaky again, like I did when I was climbing the ladder. "Yeah," he says. A smile spreads over his face. "It's coming from the park at the end of the pier," he says. "Figures. It's surrounded by open space, but the trees provide some camouflage. Obviously not enough." "Okay," I say. I look over my shoulder at him. We are so close I forget where I am. Instead, I notice that the corners of his mouth turn down naturally, just like mine, and that he has a scar on his chin. I say. I clear my throat. "Start climbing down. I'll follow you." Four nods and steps down. His leg is so long that he finds a place for his foot easily and guides his body between the bars. Even in darkness, I see that his hands are bright red and shaking. I step down with one foot, pressing my weight into one of the crossbars. The bar creaks beneath me and comes loose, clattering against half a dozen bars on the way down and bouncing on the pavement. I'm dangling from the scaffolding with my toes swinging in midair. A strangled gasp escapes me. "Four!" I try to find another place to put my foot, but the nearest foothold is a few feet away, farther than I can stretch. My hands are sweaty. I remember wiping them on my slacks before the choosing ceremony, before the aptitude test, before every important moment, and suppress a scream. I will slip. I will slip. "Hold on," he shouts. "Just hold on. I have an idea." He keeps climbing down. He's moving in the wrong direction. He should be coming toward me, not going away from me. I stare at my hands, which are wrapped around the narrow bar so tightly my knuckles are white. My fingers are dark red, almost purple. They won't last long. I won't last long. I squeeze my eyes shut. Better not to look. Better to pretend that none of this exists. I hear four sneakers squeak against metal and rapid footsteps on ladder rungs. "Four!" I yell. Maybe he left. Maybe he abandoned me. Maybe this is a test of my strength, of my bravery. I breathe in my nose and out my mouth. I count my breaths to calm down. 1, 2. In. Out. "Come on, Four," is all I can think. "Come on. Do something." Then I hear something wheeze and creak. The bar I'm holding shudders, and I scream through my clenched teeth as I fight to keep my grip. The wheel is moving. Air wraps around my ankles and wrists as the wind gushes up like a geyser. I open my eyes. I'm moving. Toward the ground. I laugh, giddy with hysteria as the ground comes closer and closer. But I'm picking up speed. If I don't drop at the right time, the moving cars and metal scaffolding will drag at my body and carry me with them. And then I will really die. Every muscle in my body tenses as I hurtle toward the ground. When I can see the cracks in the sidewalk, I drop, and my body slams into the ground, feet first. My legs collapse beneath me, and I pull my arms in, rolling as fast as I can to the side. The cement scrapes my face, and I turn just in time to see a car bearing down on me, like a giant shoe about to crush me. I roll again, and the bottom of the car skims my shoulder. I'm safe. I press my palms to my face. I don't try to get up. If I did, I'm sure I would just fall back down. I hear footsteps, and Four's hands wrap around my wrists.
I let him pry my hands from my eyes. He encloses one of my hands perfectly between two of his. The warmth of his skin overwhelms the ache in my fingers from holding the bars.
"You all right?" he asks, pressing our hands together.
"Yeah." He starts to laugh. After a second, I laugh too. With my free hand, I push myself to a sitting position. I am aware of how little space there is between us. 6 inches at most. That space feels charged with electricity. I feel like it should be smaller. He stands, pulling me up with him. The wheel is still moving, creating a wind that tosses my hair back.
"You could have told me that the Ferris wheel still worked," I say. I try to sound casual. "We wouldn't have had to climb in the first place."
"I would have if I had known," he says. "Couldn't just let you hang there, so I took a risk. Come on, time to get their flag."
Four hesitates for a moment, and then takes my arm, his fingertips pressing to the inside of my elbow. In other factions, he would give me time to recover, but he is dauntless. So he smiles at me and starts toward the carousel, where our team members guard our flag. And I half run, half limp beside him. I still feel weak, but my mind is awake, especially with his hand on me.
Christina is perched on one of the horses, her long legs crossed and her hand around the pole holding the plastic animal upright. Our flag is behind her, a glowing triangle in the dark. 3 Dauntless-born initiates stand among the other worn and dirty animals. One of them has his hand on a horse's head, and a scratched horse eye stares at me between his fingers. Sitting on the edge of the carousel is an older Dauntless, scratching her quadruple-pierced eyebrow with her thumb.
"Where'd the others go?" asks Four. He looks as excited as I feel, his eyes wide with energy.
"Did you guys turn on the wheel?" the older girl says. "What the hell are you thinking? You might as well have just shouted, 'Here we are! Come and get us!'"
She shakes her head. "If I lose again this year, the shame will be unbearable. 3 years in a row?"
"The wheel doesn't matter," says Four. "We know where they are."
"We?" says Christina, looking from Four to me.
"Yes. While the rest of you were twiddling your thumbs, Triss climbed the Ferris wheel to look for the other team," he says.
"What do we do now, then?"
asks one of the Dauntless-born initiates through a yawn. Four looks at me. Slowly, the eyes of the other initiates, including Christina, migrate from him to me. I tense my shoulders, about to shrug and say I don't know. And then an image of the pier stretching out beneath me comes into my mind. I have an idea.
"Split in half," I say. "4 of us go to the right side of the pier, 3 to the left. The other team is in the park at the end of the pier. So the group of 4 will charge as the group of 3 sneaks behind the other team to get the flag."
Christina looks at me like she no longer recognizes me. I don't blame her.
"Sounds good," says the older girl, clapping her hands together.
"Let's get this night over with, shall we?"
Christina joins me in the group going to the right, along with Uriah, whose smile looks white against his skin's bronze. I didn't notice before, but he has a tattoo of a snake behind his ear. I stare at its tail curling around his earlobe for a moment, but then Christina starts running, and I have to follow her. I have to run twice as fast to match my short strides to her long ones. As I run, I realize that only one of us will get to touch the flag, and it won't matter that it was my plan and my information that got us to it if I'm not the one who grabs it. Though I can hardly breathe as it is, I run faster, and I'm on Christina's heels. I pull my gun around my body, holding my finger over the trigger. We reach the end of the pier, and I clamp my mouth shut to keep my loud breaths in. We slow down so our footsteps aren't as loud, and I look for the blinking light again. Now that I'm on the ground, it's bigger and easier to see. I point, and Christina nods, leading the way toward it. Then I hear a chorus of yells, so loud they make me jump. I hear puffs of air as paintballs go flying and splats as they find their targets. Our team has charged. The other team runs to meet us, and the flag is almost unguarded. Uriah takes aim and shoots the last guard in the thigh. The guard, a short girl with purple hair, throws her gun to the ground in a tantrum. I sprint to catch up to Christina.
The flag hangs from a tree branch, high above my head. I reach for it, and so does Christina.
Come on, Triss, she says. You're already the hero of the day, and you know you can't reach it anyway.
She gives me a patronizing look, the way people sometimes look at children when they act too adult, and snatches the flag from the branch. Without looking at me, she turns and gives a whoop of victory. Uriah's voice joins hers, and then I hear a chorus of yells in the distance. Uriah claps my shoulder, and I try to forget about the look Christina gave me. Maybe she's right. I've already proved myself today. I do not want to be greedy. I do not want to be like Eric, terrified of other people's strength. The shouts of triumph become infectious, and I lift my voice to join in, running toward my teammates. Christina holds the flag up high, and everyone clusters around her, grabbing her arm to lift the flag even higher. I can't reach her, so I stand off to the side, grinning. A hand touches my shoulder.
Well done, Four says quietly.
I can't believe I missed it, Will says again, shaking his head. Wind coming through the doorway of the train car blows his hair in every direction. You are performing the very important job of staying out of our way, says Christina, beaming.
Al groans. Why did I have to be on the other team?
Because life's not fair, Albert.
And the world is conspiring against you, says Will.
Hey, can I see the flag again?
Peter, Molly, and Drew sit across from the members in the corner. Their chests and backs are splattered with blue and pink paint, and they look dejected. They speak quietly, sneaking looks at the rest of us, especially Christina. That is the benefit of not holding the flag right now. I am no one's target, or at least, no more than usual.
So you climb the Ferris wheel, huh? Says Uriah.
He stumbles across the car and sits next to me. Marlene, the girl with the flirty smile, follows him.
Yes, I say.
Pretty smart of you. Like, erudite smart, Marlene says.
I'm Marlene.
Triss, I say. At home, being compared to an erudite would be an insult. But she says it like a compliment.
Yeah, I know who you are, she says. The first jumper tends to stick in your head.
It has been years since I jumped off a building in my abnegation uniform. It has been decades.
Uriah takes one of the paintballs from his gun and squeezes it between his thumb and index finger. The train lurches to the left, and Uriah falls against me, his fingers pinching the paintball until a stream of pink, foul-smelling paint sprays on my face. Marlene collapses and giggles. I wipe some of the paint from my face slowly, and then smear it on his cheek. The scent of fish oil wafts through the train car.
Ew!
He squeezes the ball at me again, but the opening is at the wrong angle, and the paint sprays into his mouth instead. He coughs and makes exaggerated gagging sounds. I wipe my face with my sleeve, laughing so hard my stomach hurts.
If my entire life is like this, loud laughter and bold action, and the kind of exhaustion you feel after a hard but satisfying day, I will be content.
As Uriah scrapes his tongue with his fingertips, I realize that all I have to do is get through initiation, and that life will be mine.
Chapter 13. The next morning, when I trudge into the training room, yawning, a large target stands at one end of the room, and next to the door is a table with knives strewn across it. Target practice again. At least it won't hurt. Eric stands in the middle of the room, his posture so rigid it looks like someone replaced his spine with a metal rod. The sight of him makes me feel like all the air in the room is heavier, bearing down on me. At least when he was slouched against a wall, I could pretend he wasn't here. Today I can't pretend.
Tomorrow will be the last day of stage one, Eric says. You will resume fighting then. Today, you'll be learning how to aim. Everyone pick up three knives.
His voice is deeper than usual.
And pay attention while Four demonstrates the correct technique for throwing them.
At first no one moves.
Now!
We scramble for daggers. They aren't as heavy as guns, but they still feel strange in my hands, like I am not allowed to hold them.
He's in a bad mood today, mumbles Christina.
Is he ever in a good mood?
I murmur back. But I know what she means. Judging by the poisonous look Eric gives for when he isn't paying attention, last night's loss must have bothered Eric more than he let on. Winning Capture the Flag is a matter of pride, and pride is important to the Dauntless, more important than reason or sense. I watch Four's arm as he throws a knife. The next time he throws, I watch his stance. He hits the target each time, exhaling as he releases the knife. Eric orders, "Line up!" Haste, I think, will not help. My mother told me that when I was learning how to knit. I have to think of this as a mental exercise, not a physical exercise. So I spend the first few minutes practicing without a knife, finding the right stance, learning the right arm motion. Eric paces too quickly behind us.
"I think the stiff's taken too many hits to the head," remarks Peter, a few people down. "Hey, stiff, remember what a knife is?"
Ignoring him, I practice the throw again with a knife in hand, but don't release it. I shut out Eric's pacing, and Peter's jeering, and the nagging feeling that Four is staring at me, and throw the knife. It spins, end over end, slamming into the board. The blade doesn't stick, but I'm the first person to hit the target. I smirk as Peter misses again. I can't help myself.
"Hey, Peter," I say. "Remember what a target is?"
Next to me, Christina snorts, and her next knife hits the target. A half hour later, Al is the only initiate who hasn't hit the target yet. His knives clatter to the floor or bounce off the wall. While the rest of us approach the board to collect our weapons, he hunts the floor for his. The next time he tries and misses, Eric marches toward him and demands,
"How slow are you, Kander?
Do you need glasses? Should I move the target closer to you?" Al's face turns red. He throws another knife, and this one sails a few feet to the right of the target. It spins and hits the wall.
"Where was that, initiate?" says Eric quietly, leaning closer to Al.
I bite my lip. This isn't good.
It slipped, says Al.
"Well, I think you should go get it," Eric says. He scans the other initiates' faces. Everyone has stopped throwing again, and says,
"Did I tell you to stop?"
Knives start to hit the board. We have all seen Eric angry before, but this is different. The look in his eyes is almost rabid.
"Go get it?"
Al's eyes are wide. "But everyone's still throwing."
"And?"
"And I don't want to get hit."
"I think you can trust your fellow initiates to aim better than you."
Eric smiles a little, but his eyes stay cruel.
"Go get your knife."
Al doesn't usually object to anything the Dauntless tell us to do. I don't think he's afraid to. He just knows that objecting is useless. This time, Al sets his wide jaw. He's reached the limits of his compliance.
"No,"
he says.
"Why not?"
Eric's beady eyes fix on Al's face.
"Are you afraid
of getting stabbed by an airborne knife?" says Al.
"Yes, I am."
Honesty is his mistake, not his refusal, which Eric might have accepted.
"Everyone stop!"
Eric shouts. The knives stop, and so does all conversation. I hold my small dagger tightly.
"Clear out of the ring,"
Eric looks at Al. "All except you." I drop the dagger, and it hits the dusty floor with a thud. I follow the other initiates to the edge of the room, and they inch in front of me, eager to see what makes my stomach turn. Al, facing Eric's wrath.
"Stand in front of the target," says Eric.
Al's big hands shake. He walks back to the target.
"Hey, Four," Eric looks over his shoulder. "Give me a hand here, huh?"
Four scratches one of his eyebrows with a knife point and approaches Eric. He has dark circles under his eyes and a tense set to his mouth. He's as tired as we are.
"You're going to stand there as he throws those knives,"
Eric says to Al, "until you learn not to flinch."
"Is this really necessary?"
says Four. He sounds bored, but he doesn't look bored. His face and body are tense, alert. I squeeze my hands into fists.
No matter how casual Four sounds, the question is a challenge, and Four doesn't often challenge Eric directly. At first, Eric stares at Four in silence. Four stares back. Seconds pass, and my fingernails bite my palms.
I have the authority here, remember? Eric says so quietly I can barely hear him. Here and everywhere else.
Color rushes into Four's face, though his expression does not change. His grip on the knives tightens, and his knuckles turn white as he turns to face Al. I look from Al's wide, dark eyes to his shaking hands to the determined set of Four's jaw. Anger bubbles in my chest and bursts from my mouth. Stop it! Four turns the knife in his hand, his fingers moving painstakingly over the metal edge. He gives me such a hard look that I feel like he's turning me to stone. I know why. I am stupid for speaking up while Eric is here. I am stupid for speaking up at all.
Any idiot can stand in front of a target, I say. It doesn't prove anything except that you're bullying us. Which, as I recall, is a sign of cowardice.
Then it should be easy for you, Eric says, if you're willing to take his place. The last thing I want to do was stand in front of that target, but I can't back down now. I didn't leave myself the option. I weave through the crowd of initiates, and someone shoves my shoulder.
There goes your pretty face, hisses Peter. Oh, wait, you don't have one.
I recover my balance and walk toward Al. He nods at me. I try to smile encouragingly, but I can't manage it. I stand in front of the board, and my head doesn't even reach the center of the target, but it doesn't matter. I look at Four's knives, one in his right hand, two in his left hand. My throat is dry. I try to swallow, and then look at Four. He is never sloppy. He won't hit me. I'll be fine. I tip my chin up. I will not flinch. If I flinch, I prove to Eric that this is not as easy as I said it was. I prove that I'm a coward.
If you flinch, Four says slowly, carefully, Al takes your place. Understand? I nod.
Four's eyes are still on mine when he lifts his hand, pulls his elbow back, and throws the knife. It is just a flash in the air, and then I hear a thud. The knife is buried in the board, half a foot away from my cheek. I close my eyes. Thank God.
You about done, Stiff? Asks Four.
I remember Al's wide eyes and his quiet sobs at night and shake my head. No.
Eyes open, then.
He taps the spot between his eyebrows. I stare at him, pressing my hands to my side so no one can see them shake. He passes a knife from his left hand to his right hand, and I see nothing but his eyes as the second knife hits the target above my head. This one is closer than the last one. I feel it hovering over my skull.
Come on, Stiff, he says. Let someone else stand there and take it.
Why is he trying to goad me into giving up? Does he want me to fail?
Shut up, Four!
I hold my breath as he turns the last knife in his hand. I see a glint in his eyes as he pulls his arm back and lets the knife fly. It comes straight at me, spinning, blade over handle. My body goes rigid. This time, when it hits the board, my ear stings, and blood tickles my skin. I touch my ear. He nicked it. And judging by the look he gives me, he did it on purpose.
I would love to stay and see if the rest of you are as daring as she is, says Eric, his voice smooth. But I think that's enough for today.
He squeezes my shoulder. His fingers feel dry and cold, and the look he gives me claims me, like he's taking ownership of what I did. I don't return Eric's smile. What I did had nothing to do with him.
I should keep my eye on you, he adds.
Fear prickles inside me, in my chest and in my head and in my hands. I feel like the word divergent is branded on my forehead, and if he looks at me long enough, he'll be able to read it. But he just lifts his hand from my shoulders and keeps walking. Four and I stay behind. I wait until the room is empty,
and the door is shut before looking at him again. He walks toward me.
Is your...
he begins.
You did that on purpose! I shout.
Yes, I did, he says quietly. And you should thank me for helping you. I grit my teeth.
Thank you? You almost stabbed my ear, and you spent the entire time taunting me. Why should I thank you?
You know, I'm getting a little tired of waiting for you to catch on. He glares at me, and even when he glares, his eyes look thoughtful. Their shade of blue is peculiar. So dark it is almost black, with a small patch of lighter blue on the left iris, right next to the corner of his eye.
Catch on? Catch on to what? That you wanted to prove to Eric how tough you are? That you're sadistic, just like he is?
I am not sadistic. He doesn't yell. I wish he would yell. It would scare me less. He leans his face close to mine, which reminds me of lying inches away from the attack dog's fangs in the aptitude test, and says,
If I wanted to hurt you, don't you think I would have already?
He crosses the room and slams the point of a knife so hard into the table that it sticks there, handle toward the ceiling.
I start to shout, but he's already gone.
I scream frustrated and wipe some of the blood from my ear.
Chapter 14. Today is the day before visiting day. I think of visiting day like I think of the world ending. Nothing after it matters. Everything I do builds up to it. I might see my parents again. I might not. Which is worse? I don't know.
I try to pull a pant leg over my thigh and it sticks just above my knee. Frowning, I stare at my leg. A bulge of muscle is stopping the fabric. I let the pant leg fall and look over my shoulder at the back of my thigh. Another muscle stands out there. I step to the side so I stand in front of the mirror. I see muscles that I couldn't see before in my arms, legs, and stomach. I pinch my side, where a layer of fat used to hint at curves to come. Nothing. Dauntless initiation has stolen whatever softness my body had. Is that good or bad? At least I am stronger than I was. I wrap my towel around me again and leave the girls' bathroom. I hope no one is in the dormitory to see me walking in my towel, but I can't wear those pants. When I open the dormitory door, a weight drops into my stomach. Peter, Molly, Drew, and some of the other initiates stand in the back corner laughing. They look up when I walk in and start snickering. Molly's snort laugh is louder than everyone else's. I walk to my bunk, trying to pretend like they aren't there, and fumble in the drawer under my bed for the dress Christina made me get. One hand clamped around the towel, and one holding the dress, I stand up, and right behind me is Peter. I jump back, almost hitting my head on Christina's bunk. I try to slip past him, but he slams his hand against Christina's bed frame, blocking my path. I should have known he wouldn't let me get away that easily.
Didn't realize you were so skinny, stiff.
Get away from me. My voice is somehow steady. This isn't the hub, you know. No one has to follow a stiff's orders here. His eyes travel down my body, not in the greedy way that a man looks at a woman, but cruelly, scrutinizing every flaw. I hear my heartbeat in my ears as the others inch closer, forming a pack behind Peter. This will be bad. I have to get out of here. Out of the corner of my eye, I see a clear path to the door. If I can duck under Peter's arm and sprint toward it, I might be able to make it.
Look at her, says Molly, crossing her arms. She smirks at me. She's practically a child.
Oh, I don't know, says Drew. She could be hiding something under that towel.
Why don't we look and see?
Now. I duck under Peter's arm and dart toward the door. Something pinches and pulls at my towel as I walk away, and then yanks sharply. Peter's hand, gathering the fabric into his fist. The towel slips from my hand and the air is cold on my naked body, making the hair on the back of my neck stand on end. Laughter erupts, and I run as fast as I can toward the door, holding the dress against my body to hide it. I sprint down the hallway and into the bathroom and lean against the door, breathing hard. I close my eyes,
It doesn't matter. I don't care. A sob bursts from my mouth, and I slap my hand over my lips to contain it. It doesn't matter what they saw. I shake my head like the motion is supposed to make it true. With shaking hands, I get dressed. The dress is plain black, with a V-neck that shows the tattoos on my collarbone, and goes down to my knees. Once I'm dressed and the urge to cry is gone, I feel something hot and violent writhing in my stomach. I want to hurt them. I stare at my eyes in the mirror. I want to, so I will. I can't fight in a dress, so I get myself some new clothes from the pit before I walk to the training room for my last fight. I hope it's with Peter. Hey, where were you this morning? Christina asks when I walk in. I squint to see the blackboard across the room. The space next to my name is blank. I haven't gotten an opponent yet. I got held up, I say. Four stands in front of the board and writes a name next to mine. Please let it be Peter. Please, please. You okay, Tris? You look a little... says Al. A little what? Four moves away from the board. The name written next to mine is Molly. Not Peter, but good enough. On edge, says Al. My fight is last on the list, which means I have to wait through three matches before I face her. Edward and Peter fight second to last. Good. Edward is the only one who can beat Peter. Christina will fight Al, which means that Al will lose quickly, like he's been doing all week. Go easy on me, okay? Al asks Christina. I make no promises, she replies. The first pair, Will and Myra, stand across from each other in the arena. For a second, they both shuffle back and forth, one jerking an arm forward and then retracting it, the other kicking and missing. Across the room, Four leans against the wall and yawns. I stare at the board and try to predict the outcome of each match. It doesn't take long. Then I bite my fingernails and think about Molly. Christina lost to her, which means she's good. She has a powerful punch, but she doesn't move her feet. If she can't hit me, she can't hurt me. As expected, the next fight between Christina and Al is quick and painless. Al falls after a few hard hits to the face and doesn't get back up, which makes Eric shake his head. Edward and Peter take longer. Though they are the two best fighters, the disparity between them is noticeable. Edward's fist slams into Peter's jaw, and I remember what Will said about him, that he has been studying combat since he was 10. It's obvious. He is faster and smarter than even Peter. By the time the three matches are done, my nails are bitten to the beds, and I'm hungry for lunch. I walk to the arena without looking at anyone or anything but the center of the room. Some of my anger has faded, but it isn't hard to call back. All I have to do is think about how cold the air was and how loud the laughter was. Look at her. She's a child. Molly stands across from me. Was that a birthmark I saw on your left butt cheek? She says, smirking. God, you're pale, stiff. She'll make the first move. She always does. Molly starts toward me and throws her weight into a punch. As her body shifts forward, I duck and drive my fist into her stomach, right over her belly button. Before she can get her hands on me, I slip past her, my hands up, ready for her next attempt. She's not smirking anymore. She runs at me like she's about to tackle me, and I dart out of the way. I hear Four's voice in my head, telling me that the most powerful weapon at my disposal is my elbow. I just have to find a way to use it. I block her next punch with my forearm. The blow stings, but I barely notice it. She grits her teeth and lets out a frustrated groan, more animal-sounding than human. She tries a sloppy kick at my side, which I dodge, and while her balance is off, I rush forward and force my elbow up at her face. She pulls her head back just in time, and my elbow grazes her chin. She punches me in the ribs, and I stumble to the side, recovering my breath. There's something she's not protecting. I know it. I want to hit her face. But maybe that's not a smart move. I watch her for a few seconds. Her hands are too high. They guard her nose and cheeks, leaving her stomach and ribs exposed. Molly and I have the same flaw in combat.
Our eyes meet for just a second. I aim an uppercut low, below her belly button. My fist sinks into her flesh, forcing a heavy